Still raining. And yeah, it's still 48 degrees. Yes, I know that's exactly how I started the show yesterday morning, but it's still accurate this morning. And yes, I am starting to feel like Phil Connors of AgriTalk. And now, let's turn it over to our handsome news guy, our very own Ned Ryerson.
Live from the nation's soggy midsection via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning we begin with Michael Ott, CEO and founder of Rantizo. Then we've got Scott the Cow Guy Shelody. And right after the news, Greg Henderson from Drovers. I'm handsome newsman Ned Ryerson. And now, the host of AgriTalk, Phil Connors.
How you doing there, Ned? Hey, watch your step.
Do you believe
Ned?
Well, whoa, that last step there's a doozy. Do you believe in deja vu?
Well, I don't know. I do. Can check with the kitchen.
What? I mean, come on. This has got to end at some point. We are over 4.5 inches of rain here at the Flory Ranch, including everything that we got over Labor Day weekend, okay? Mm-hmm. But, yeah, here we are. There it is. Thank you. Wow.
It's going to last for the rest of your life. It's going to be cold and wet every day.
It doesn't matter what you do. I tell you what, I know what happens to groundhogs around here. And they probably wouldn't get the welcome that they do there at Punxsutawney. I'm just saying.
Even America's favorite groundhog weatherman. I mean, come on.
That's right.
With his little hat, you know, and they pull him out and he's still deep and he looks around.
Oh, good grief. We have got a great show. We're going to do a live Best of Farm Journal Field Days because it is so cool when we have the conversation with Michael Ott from Rantizo and then Scott Shelody. He hasn't been – I mean, I think it was Market Rally the last time that he was on the afternoon hour of AgriTalk. But we're going to talk equities, money management, what's really driving the volatility that we've got in the equities trade right now. So should be cool. All right, buddy. Let's get to it. What you got in the news?
Feels like it's a waste of news time to even bring this one up. The U.S. Senate will likely hold a procedural vote today on whether to advance the slimmed-down Republican pandemic relief bill, with Democrats saying they have the votes to keep it from reaching the support of the 60 members it needs. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell acknowledged Wednesday that it is little more than a show vote, saying, quote, "It will be a procedural vote. It's not a vote to pass our bill tomorrow precisely as written." Republican leaders are hoping to manage a simple majority, with Senator John Thune from South Dakota noting a majority vote would demonstrate party unity, which he believes would pressure Democrats to come to the table and to make a deal. But what if they don't get that simple majority? What does that then demonstrate, right?
Well, then you lose the leverage. This is a vote to get leverage in the negotiations with House Speaker Pelosi. If that fails, and then it's back to the drawing board with Mnuchin, probably.
Yep. Well, an article in the South China Morning Post suggests China is considering cutting off exports of pharmaceuticals to the United States as tensions between the two superpowers continue to flare. An article in the South China Morning Post reads, quote, "In recent weeks, as the United States has ramped up its attacks on Chinese tech firms and the threat of financial decoupling has grown, government advisors in Beijing have begun debating a so-called nuclear option, which is cutting U.S. access to medicines from pills for pain relief to HIV medications. They remind the U.S. is heavily reliant on imported medicines from China." This is kind of a big one.
That is a significant threat and should not be taken lightly. And it should spur an incentive program of some sorts to bring manufacturing of those drugs back to the United States.
Yep. Germany has confirmed the detection of African swine fever in a wild boar near its border with Poland. That's according to the country's ag minister. The country is stressing the, quote, "principle of regionality" in the case, emphasizing that a farm animal was not involved. The country is concerned that importers of pork could respond with blanket bans. But isn't a feral hog a little bit more likely to spread the disease than a confined animal?
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Is my thought.
That's why it's a big concern. South Korea has already banned the imports of pork from Germany.
Saw that too. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo said yesterday, limited seating for indoor dining at restaurants in New York City may resume, lifting a six-month ban aimed at stemming the spread of the new coronavirus. While restaurants have been able to offer takeout and serve customers outdoors, the industry has struggled to make ends meet without the ability to offer indoor seating. New York had been one of the few cities with a total ban on indoor dining. Seems like, a good step maybe.
I'll bet Scott Shelley's got some thoughts on that coming up later in the show. Yeah.
Well, AstraZeneca says it could restart its clinical trials of a coronavirus vaccine as soon as next week, depending on an investigation into a volunteer test subject's illness, according to the Financial Times. Delivering the vaccines, on another note, will require a massive effort on the part of air transporters. Dubbing it the largest single transport challenge ever, the International Air Transport Association called on governments to start making a plan now for the large-scale coronavirus delivery. Chip, just providing a single dose to 7.8 billion people would fill 8,000 747 cargo aircrafts.
Oh, wow!
Yeah, think about
that. That's huge. Yeah.
Yeah. And finally, Nelly, here we go. The National Football League kicks off its 101st season tonight. The NFL commissioner of the league's chief medical officer write that they're cautiously optimistic as they prepare to implement new high-tech measures designed to reduce COVID-19 infections. Chip.
All right. Yeah, here we go. Rumbling, bumbling, stumbling into a new NFL season, a new style NFL season. All right, Greg Henderson. Thank you, Davis. Greg Henderson, editorial director at Drovers. How you doing, Greg?
Good morning, Chip. I'm very...
Telephone number 913.
Hello. Let's not put that out there. You still there, Greg?
After the beep.
Hey, ho, ho. Turn that.
Should we leave him a message?
Yeah,
hey, you're supposed to be on the radio, dude.
Grab him there. There we go. Hey, Greg. We were going to leave you a message, buddy, but we decided to get you back here. What's going on in Kansas with the health?
All that rain has done something to your phone wire.
Telephone number 9.
Oh, good grief. We're having a hard time. So I do know what Greg was wanting to talk about, though. He was wanting to talk about the Kansas Department of Health and Environment, which is talking about some of the clusters of COVID cases that are now showing up again at the meat packing plants in cases. So we've got the harvest numbers, the cattle harvest numbers, the processing, back to near normal levels in Kansas. But because of these clustered of COVID cases, I know that Greg wants to warn us that we're not out of the woods as far as potential slowdowns going forward. Is that right, Greg?
That's correct, Chip. Kansas Department of Health and Environment said that the 2,100 clusters in Kansas have been linked to the meatpacking plants. Right. And the reason we need to bring this up is because we've had a pretty good summer. We're back to normal on slaughter numbers. But, you know, with cooler weather and these clusters still active, that could spell trouble for the beef industry.
Yeah, no doubt. And, we continue to talk about these big packer margins, but that doesn't account for all the costs associated with the Packers' COVID-19 precautions. So something that we need to watch there. Thanks, Greg. We'll talk to you later.
Thank you.
We've got Mike Ott up next on AgriTalk.
I'm Andrew McBread, inviting you to join me for Farming the Countryside, a farmer-focused podcast important to agriculture. It's brought to you by Pivot BioProven. Visit pivotbio.com to find a representative near you.
Say, Chip.
Yes, Davis.
Looks like we better get going if we're going to stay ahead of the weather.
I don't think it's going to rain anymore.
Is it snowing in space?
I don't know.
I don't think the heavy stuff's going to come down for a while.
That's right.
Buddy, you got moisture on your head.
All right. Hey, everybody, don't forget, you can get 24/7 free access to all of the great content from Farm Journal Field Days at agweb.com/fielddaysondemand. The best of Farm Journal Field Days is brought to you by DeKalb Asgrow and the new hashtag Growing Ahead initiative, sponsored by Bayer. Follow DeKalb Asgrove on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook to see how your local DeKalb Asgrove teams have gone virtual to keep delivering the solid agronomic advice you expect. And we're going to do a really cool live version of the best of the Farm Journal Field Days because Michael Ott, the CEO of Rantizo, was right there in Jessup, Iowa doing demonstrations. Michael, welcome to AgriTalk. How you doing?
Thank you, guys. How you doing today?
Doing just fine, just fine. Yeah, so it thanks for being there in Jessup a couple of weeks ago. It's fun, wasn't it?
Oh, it was a blast. We met some great people, showed them our drone sprayers, answered a ton of questions, got to show the granular spreader doing some cover crop seeding, did the liquid sprayer spraying. We were just spraying water because we were doing the same thing over and over again. But we could do fungicide, herbicide, insecticide, you name it.
Right, right. So, Rantizo, your tagline is we deliver solutions, and you do it literally with a drone. And I want you to explain what the drones look like here in just a little bit and what they're capable of. But let's start with what you use them for first. And you mentioned the spraying. And I think the first time that we talked about your spray drones, Michael, was when there was an outbreak of those thistle caterpillars, right?
Yep. Yeah, we've used a few things on caterpillars. We've got an organic spray and then a traditional application. So we've treated them a range of ways successfully in all cases. And we're using our liquid sprayer with our drone. It's got a 14-foot boom that sprays a 20-foot swath. And we're doing about 14 acres an hour at a 3 gallon per acre rate.
Wow. That is impressive,
a lot of numbers,
Michael.
There.
Yeah, some big numbers, but and correct me if I'm wrong. I mean, I love the fact that you can do 14 acres in 3 hours with this drone, but
14 acres per hour.
Per hour. I'm sorry. 14 acres per hour. The thing that impresses me so much is that if there's an opportunity or a need to go out and do some of that spot spraying, this works so incredibly well.
Exactly. We've got about a half dozen partnerships with imagery companies. So when we've diagnosed a problem, you've got, you know, insects on the west side of your field, you got weeds on the east side. Normally you just say, all right, load up a bunch of insecticide, herbicide, treat the whole thing.
Yep.
What we can do is spray insecticide right where it's needed, herbicide where it's needed, and not vice versa. So it reduces your chemical cost very significantly, and your holistic cost to treat your field is way, way cheaper.
Yeah. Yeah. We talk about the need to manage our chemical use and to manage it so that – to do it voluntarily so that all of a sudden we're not being faced with all the rules and regulations and restrictions on – or further restrictions on use. This is a great way to prove that we're doing it.
Absolutely. And we're now able to scale this pretty significantly because Rantizo is the only company that's legally swarming in the United States. We're flying 3 drones at once now, so we're almost tripling our productivity.
Okay. So we can we've got the productivity, the efficiency of doing it out there. Well, I shouldn't say efficiency yet. Let's talk about cost here, Michael. Is it cost effective?
Sure. Absolutely. So we charge by the hour because we're going out into random, hard-to-reach, problematic situations. And a lot of times I'm treating a percentage of your field, and we may not know that until the morning of. Am I treating 20% of your field, 75% of your field, or 90? And so what we do is map out exactly where those issues are, and then we'll go out and fly and apply. We're charging $150 per hour per drone. And when you factor in chemical costs and everything else, in almost all situations, it's cheaper to do that than to treat the entire field with a traditional tractor or plane.
Sure. Cool. That makes a whole all kinds of sense in charging for your service that way rather than on a per acre basis. It makes a lot of sense. Now, as we look at managing runoff, we look at all the conservation issues that have become so popular, and including cover crops. This one excites me a lot too, Michael. Out there actually seeding a cover crop with a drone, right?
Yeah, we're doing a heck of a lot of that. So Rentizo works with our contractors, and we just had a cover crop webinar where we were talking about all the issues related to seeding rate, how to get everything programmed, how to map everything out, talking through the benefits of working with the NRCS. So we get a lot of information to our contractors so they can go out and apply those cover crop seeds very efficiently and effectively all over the country.
Yeah. All right. Now the hunter in me is going to come out here, Michael, because I'm thinking about food plots.
Yep.
Stuff like that in those hard to reach areas. I mean, it seems like a natural fit.
Yeah. We've talked to a couple groups. They don't like carrying everything out in a gator, having to haul it, load it, drop it where it needs to go. I always say, let the drone do the work for you. I mean, you program it where you want it to go. It'll fly up above anything and then just drop out that seed or fertilizer or whatever you want to drop out there. Let the drone do that. You've got more higher value things to do.
Yeah. So this drone that is dropping the cover crop seed, how much can it carry at a time? How much can it do?
So we're doing about 20 to 25 pounds per flight. So your application rate really affects your productivity. At about a 10 pound per acre rate, you're doing about 12 acres an hour. When you get up to like 40 pounds per acre, you'll be down to about 4 acres an hour. So we're kind of in that range. And we've got a lot of seed mixes approved by the NRCS that are in that 10 to 15 pound range where you can get credit on your farm, and then we can apply it really efficiently. And then once again, we can go precisely where you need it. We can hit the whole field, or if you've got, you know, a meandering creek that goes through and you want to get really curvy application, we can do that pretty well.
Yeah. Yeah. So tell us about these drones, Michael. I mean, these are some beefy machines.
Yeah, they're 55 pounds, fully loaded, 14-foot boom on the liquid sprayer, spraying a 20-foot swath. So it's pretty good size. And I love getting out to show people how this works. And we always, you know, want people to connect with us on Twitter. You can find us at Rentizo Sprays and ask for demonstrations. We love to go out and show people how this works. So that's a good way to let us know if you want to see a demonstration, because they're pretty big.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. There's no question. While I was there at Ben Renchie's in Jessup, Iowa, when you were out back of the shop doing demos back there, I was in an office up in Ben's office doing the AgriTalk from there. And all of a sudden, here comes this monster drone flying up into the window. It's kind of intimidating, well, Michael. There's no question about that.
That's true. And I'll keep it appropriate for the radio, but a lot of times we get a, holy cow, that's way bigger than I thought, and substitute cow for more adult language. But more than a dozen times that's happened to us.
Yeah, yeah. Now, the drone that, well, how many props are on these drones?
So this is an octocopter, so eight sets, yep. And it flies about 15 miles an hour is our top application speed. When it's ferrying back and forth, we'll fly about 20 miles an hour, because we're all about efficiency. And one of the things that I like, you may have noticed this when it was flying, when we get to the end of a row, we don't waste time turning around, because it's a drone. It doesn't care if it's going forwards or backwards. So we just slide laterally and then continue on. So it's all those little things that, you know, that saves 1% or 2%. The ability to be precisely where you want saves a few percent. No soil compaction saves a few percent. So all those things really add up to pretty significant savings.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. It's a fascinating process, Michael. I'm glad that you could come on and talk about it. I really appreciate it. And I'm sure that I'll see you down the road sometime soon.
Yeah, sounds good. Check us out at rentizo.com.
Absolutely. All right, Michael. That is Michael Ott. He is the CEO of Rentizo. Okay, when we come back, we're going to have a conversation with Scott the Cow Guy, Scott Shellady, about what's going on in this equity trade right here on AgriTalk.
We'll be right back. Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
And joining us now is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. How you doing, Beej?
I'm all right, Chip. How are you?
Doing all right. A little bit of strength going on in the corn trade today. What's happening?
Yeah, well, we've seen a technical move pushed out above the recent resistance level. So we poked above the July highs previously, failed to find follow-through buyer interest there. We've now gone above the recent highs here and 200-day moving average. So we'll see if we uncover any more buying. But, you know, it looks like the funds are extending their length as we get ready for USDA's September crop report tomorrow morning.
Right, right. Sure feels like a bean week for export sales to China, doesn't it?
Yeah, we had more daily sales today to China for soybeans, but not relating much to price gains here, despite the strength that we talked about in the corn market and the wheat market's absolutely explosive today. So a little bit of just a pause in the soybean market ahead of tomorrow's report.
Yeah, well, what is going on in wheat?
Well, nothing to confirm it, but when you see this type of move in the wheat market, I would have to guess that China probably is in, or at least rumors that they're sniffing around for some U.S. wheat. That's kind of been the case the past couple of weeks, and we haven't had anything confirmed, so we'll see.
Gotcha. Explosive. Speaking of explosive moves, go over to hogs.
Yeah, very much so. Limit up in many of the contracts there. News of the ASF case, African swine fever case in Germany, and that's got hopes up that the U.S. will export even more pork to China. Strength in the hog market is carrying over to the cattle market, supporting them futures as well.
All right, very good. Thank you, Brian. That's Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady on Markets Now.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
America's conservation ag movement would like to recognize Corteva for its efforts in contributing to healthier, more resilient production agriculture systems. To learn more, visit agweb.com/ACAM.
All right, welcome back to AgriTalk. Glad that you could join us today. I'm Chip Flory, got Davis Michelson with us.
Hello.
And yes. I am excited here because we've got Scott Shalady. He is with Ag Optimus. He is at Scott the Cow Guy on Twitter. Scott, welcome back, man. It's been a long time since we've talked. How are you?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe I made you guys mad. It's been a while, so I'm glad to be back.
I'm glad that you are back. I am so glad. So how are things going for us or for you? Tell us about Ag Optimus. What is that?
It's an IB. We got some guys sprinkled about in Iowa, a little bit of a smaller group, a little bit makes us a little more nimbler. We've got more products. We're doing a lot of, you know, starting with the structured stuff and obviously futures, and we kind of cater to anybody and everybody. So no matter your needs, big or small, we should have them covered.
All right. Very cool. Very cool. I want to talk about what's going on in this equity trade with the volatility that has come into the market again. So when you look at what's happening with stocks, Scott, what's having the most influence? Is it the anticipation of the presidential election? Is it managing the COVID pandemic? Or is it something else?
Yeah, it's something else. It's we got two things going on. The first thing is the actual equity market, right? We talk about a V-shaped recovery. Well, we've definitely had it in the equity market. But we haven't had it in the economic market, right? Main Street. So Main Street suffering while we've seen a V-shaped recovery over in the equity market. And you would ask the next question would be, well, why? Why is that happening? Yeah. Well, it's happening because of the amount of money that the government has pledged, PPP, all these government programs, unemployment, to the economy, which is still lagging because it's not fully open. But the equity market has seen that as fantastic. And in the end, depending on whatever package the government agrees to, it'll be close to $5 trillion so far, or probably it'll get bigger. But that's $5 trillion in 5 months. That's
unbelievable.
Pretty much the biggest reason why you've seen the equity market stay as healthy as it has. And then on top of it, you've got a Fed that says, we're going to stand behind it, do whatever it takes, and we're also going to keep interest rates low for longer than you'll ever believe. So interest rates low forever, a Fed that's actively saying that they're going to backstop the market. and then at the same time, the government with the money they're throwing at the problem, all leads to, I guess, a path of least resistance. We've seen things back off here a little bit, which is fine, because yeah. we had the equity market overextend a little bit, I think, because the economy is only open, say, 25 to 50% at best, so you can't have that big of a disconnect. We do have one, but the better, you know, the sooner they come back together, the better. They don't always have to be together, but one of them's in la-la land, and one of them's kind of depressed, and I'd like to see the equities kind of slow down a little bit.
Okay, which a setback now and then doesn't hurt us. There's no question about that. But it makes me wonder, these trillion-dollar valuations of some of the tech companies out there right now, I mean, is that sustainable?
No, it's not. I mean, but they've gotten, they're the headliners, and and unfortunately, there's not that many of them, and because they're so big, they've drugged those equity indices, those indexes higher with them, and that's made things look better than they are. I mean, at the end of the day, we've only got, say, our restaurants, our hospitality services, because of these government mandates, are only open 25 to 50% of their revenues, and they have to pay 100% of their overheads. And, I mean, there's enough bad news out there. You don't need me to tell it to you. You see it every day. And so we've still got an economy that is definitely struggling with an 8.5% or 8.4% unemployment rate. So we can't, at some point in time, gravity will take over. But right now, because of the headlines, and, we got a lot of folks around sitting at home, Chip, that can't gamble, right? There's no sports, right?
Yeah.
There's been a 200 to 400% increase in the amount of customers to some of these quote-unquote Robinhood accounts where they're – so there's a lot more people trading stocks than ever before all of a sudden. And so that's added a little bit of fuel to the fire as well, which a lot of guys don't talk about.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. The day trading and the rise of the day trader in this market is the influence is pretty incredible here. So on the pandemic and managing the pandemic, where does the greatest influence come from, in your opinion, Scott? Federal, state, local governments?
State. I mean, I think it's 100% in the governor's hands, whether or not they want to open up their economies or not. I mean, I hate to say this, but in February I started to get a lot of death threats because, being a broker in today's day and age, you end up reading more than you do anything else. So I feel more like a lawyer than I do a broker. But all the things that I was reading about, and I spoke about them on TV a lot, were white papers written by people that were not in the middle of the pandemic. So there was no emotion, but they were writing on how to handle it. And one of the first things they all came to the conclusion of is you don't shut your economy down, because your economy is like the gym lights, right? You leave the gym on Friday night, you hit that switch, they go off instantaneously. But when you show up for practice Saturday morning and you flip the switch, it takes a while for them to kind of warm up and turn back on.
Yep.
So once you make the decision to shut the economy down, no matter your intention to open it up, it's going to take a lot longer than you thought. And I think that we're slowly but surely every day waking up to the fact that, hey, this thing, if you fall in a hole, you don't fall out of the hole; you dig out of the hole, right? So we're in the digging. We're in the digging mode right now.
That's a good one right there. I like that one. I like that one a lot. I want to switch gears. Presidential election. How much influence is it having on day-to-day activity in the stocks?
I think I want to say more than I thought it was going to, but I also think that the stock market really does think it's trading like it thinks Trump's going to win.
Mm-hmm.
I think you'd see a lot more volatility. I mean, obviously there's volatility over there, and we had some big moves the last few days. But even before those big moves, if you go look at over that volatility index, the VIX that everyone talks about, there was a built-in volatility there, but not as much as I would have thought if Biden was going to be the president. So there's going to be a natural heightened worry, but at the same time, it would have been much more heightened than it is if Biden was going to get in. So, these betting sites around the world about that have laid odds about who the president's going to be, it seems to favor Trump, even though he's lagging in the polls. But, nobody really is very comfortable telling somebody they don't know that they want to support Donald Trump, right?
So right.
It's kind of like asking if they like Neil Diamond. Everybody loves Neil Diamond, but nobody admits it.
Okay. So what if Biden does start to pick up some momentum ahead of the election? What's the reaction in the equities?
It'll be negative. I mean, he's going to raise taxes. He's going to raise corporate taxes. He's going to raise taxes, period, across the board. So it's to the tune of $4 trillion is what he said. Okay. So $4 trillion on a $22 trillion economy is a lot. So that's just going to be another. That's just it's going to make growth slower. I mean, and we don't need that right now with a 8.5% unemployment rate and the likes that we're facing right now with all these restaurants. I mean, 65% of the restaurants in New York look to be going out of business permanently.
Yeah. That's unbelievable.
So I mean, this is not a time to be. You should be putting money in people's pockets, not taking it out. So
that's hundreds of thousands of jobs, Scott, that you're talking about in New York City.
It makes me sick, and I'm really angry about it. And I'm actually more disappointed in the American people. I love America, but I think that I'd like to see more outrage. I'd like to see, I mean, the really crazy part of me, Chip, would like to see all the restaurants in New York band together, come up with a 10 ways to say, make the customer feel safer. But then just open up Monday morning and say, come and get me.
Yeah.
Because, the choices the government's giving them is, on one hand, we're going to keep you locked down and you're going to lose everything you've worked your life for. On the other hand, you break the law, or there isn't even a law. You break this mandate, and we come get you and fine you, and you lose everything you got anyway. So if you're facing with losing everything on both ends, one of them has a chance to stand in the game by opening it up, So I think that I think the outrage should be more, and I think that people. I mean, we just had the mayor of Chicago come on last night and say she's going to cancel Halloween.
Yeah,
there's going to be a point where these mothers and these fathers of these kids are going to go, you know what? No, it's not a government holiday. You can't do it. We're going out, and that's been a real big pushback here this morning in Chicago.
Okay, well, good. Okay, couple of minutes left here. I got to ask this. So, what happens if we get to, I don't know, say November 17th, 2 weeks past the election, and we don't know who won?
That's the worst thing in the world for a market. Markets hate uncertainty. So that will be negative. I mean, and if it's not a landslide one way or the other, this could be, it could hurt. And we always talk about that. And I'm just hopeful that we've got enough of a good system in place that we can. I'm not a fan of this mail-in ballot idea either. Believe me, I don't like it. But I do think that markets hate uncertainty, and that could probably be the biggest whammy to a market is not knowing where your leadership's going to be coming from. Obviously, at some point in time, we will have a leader, but that uncertainty, markets just hate it. So
long-term investor, time to be a little defensive or stay aggressive?
I'm defensive. I've got the yellow caution lights out. However, my mother's 80 years old. We still have her in some equities. I mean, the fully invested trade is more of my style, but because you can't pick the winners and losers all the time. But it's generally speaking, what do I say? Since 1929, the last time we had something really, really bad happen, if you would have bought the high every year, you'd be a pretty wealthy man.
That's right. That is exactly right. You're looking forward to football. I know you are because of the economic activity that it normally generates.
I am really looking forward to football. But, again, I did a radio show here in Chicago this morning, and, boy, oh, boy, the phones were lighting up about how much we got to watch the social justice stuff come across the screens, The messages on the helmets and the jerseys and in the end zones. Is that going to take away from the game? Is that going to, not let people escape? It's nice that they're letting people in the stadium. But then to have to worry about whose name is on whose helmet and in honor of whom, the folks out here are kind of wondering, is this going down the road of the NBA or not?
Gotcha. Scott, it was fun to talk with you, man. We're going to do it again soon.
I'm always here for you, man. No problem.
All right. Very cool. That is Scott Schellady. He is at Scott the Cow Guy on Twitter, Ag Optimus. We'll be back. Davis and I will wrap it up in a moment.
We've cleared the schedule for you. Give us a call at 855-482-5524 and join the conversation.
All right, welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Got Davis Michelson with me. Scott Schellady was awesome. Great conversation there with Scott.
Yep. And great perspective, too.
Yep. We need to have Scott on more often just to keep the conversation moving forward here. On what's going on with money management. We need to keep the conversation going on some of the social issues that he was talking about. It was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun talking with him.
Yeah, that was really cool. Hey, I need to bring something up.
Ooh.
I want to start with a tweet, okay?
Okay.
At Jared McDaniel. Imagine you just got out of a time machine from 10 years ago. Are you where you thought you would be? I would even go one step further. Imagine you stepped out of your combine time machine from 2019. Yeah. Are you where you thought you would be here in September? There's an event coming up. It's the Agriculture Future of America, the AFA Leaders Conference. It's coming up on November 14. Let me just run some of this down here. You know, it's been a frustrating year, and some have gone what you might call the extra mile, I guess you could, to take it as a growth opportunity. You know, add a little grit, add a little resiliency to your life. Now, the AFA wants to call those beacons of hope in their communities, right?
Okay. Cool.
So, AFA, that's Agriculture Future of America, and Farm Journal want to highlight those beacons of hope in agriculture at that upcoming Leaders Conference. Cool. And specifically, folks who have chosen a path of resiliency. So, what they want you to do, what I want you to do, think about your local agriculture community, all right? Mm-hmm. Think about someone or some group of people, somebody who's made the lives of those around them better because of their resiliency. Resiliency is kind of the focus here.
Yeah, I see that.
AFA wants to recognize those in ag who have shown that resilience in their personal or professional life this year, made the lives of others around them better with their resiliency. You know, because sometimes you got to throw it in neutral, back it up, try it again. This has been the year for that. And just when you think you're getting there, you're not. Something happens, you know, something completely out of your control. And for some, that can be just devastating, frustrating. And, you know, some people have a hard time with that. And
sure,
there are others who choose the path of resiliency and positivity, either by choice or by necessity. So we want to recognize them, celebrate that spirit of resiliency in ag. Once again, AFA Leaders Conference, November 14. Now, they're accepting those nominations. I said, think about your local ag community. Who has been resilient? Who has helped out the community? Nominate that person for an award at the Leaders Conference. The website to go to is agfuture.org/hope. Once again, agfuture.org/hope. And we'll bring this up again here in the coming days. But you've only got till September 30 to come up with the name. Okay. So if there's someone in your area in agriculture who has weathered the storm and helped others to do the same, and that's really kind of it. Yeah, sure, maybe they've weathered the storm, but who's done that extra for those around them and sort of spread that message of hope, become, you know, as they're calling it, a beacon of hope in agriculture? Mm-hmm. Nominate them by September 30 at agfuture.org/hope, and they'll be recognized at AFA Leaders Conference on November 14.
Very cool.
I think it's pretty cool. I think it's pretty cool.
It is. It's very cool.
I support that. Yeah.
You know, we talk about that on AgriTalk, how even when it's a really tough day in the market, in the second hour in particular, even if it's a sucky day in the market, we still like to bring a little bit of levity, a little bit of an optimist tone to what is going on in the market. It's contagious. That's what we're looking for in these nominations, I think.
That's right.
We're looking for those people that have a contagious, positive attitude that helps to shore people up out there. It's very cool. Very cool.
Because as Amelia Earhart once said, I think she said anyway, you know, the plan is all terrific until a goose flies into your propeller, you know? Then the plan goes out the window. I think it was her that said that. Pretty sure.
Yes, no doubt. No doubt. So, all right. Agfuture.org/hope. Did I get that
right? Okay. Yes, agfuture.org/hope by September 30. So we're coming up on it.
Yep. Okay, so the conversation with Shelley.
Yes.
When I asked him about the defensive part, and he said, listen, I've even managing my 80-year-old mother's portfolio, she still owns some stocks. I think that is so important to realize. So if, you know, I've talked about becoming defensive in my retirement account, all right? Now, just because I'm more defensive than what I was. Before, I was 80% growth, 20% income. Mm-hmm. I, you know, that's for a guy my age, 55 years old, all right. I mean, that's heavily loaded on the growth side, the equity side of things. The adjustment that I made was to go to 60% income, 40% growth. Mm-hmm. So I went from 80 growth to 40, cut that position in half, and tripled the income commitment there. See? And the whole reason I'm doing it is because of when I asked Scott about what the market would look like if we're at November 17th and we don't know who the winner of the presidential election was.
Right.
You know, I feel like if he could have reached through the airwaves and slapped me just for bringing up the idea, he would have.
Well,
he would have done that.
Yeah, and quickly, because Grisafi brought up that point yesterday, too, of the stock market is the new sports betting.
Yeah.
We got football coming back online tonight.
Yep.
If sports betting becomes a thing again, are we going to see money drain out of those Robinhood accounts and go back into sports betting? What impact does that have? I think we need to investigate that.
And look at the online betting that you can do now. I mean, when they run the kicking team out, you can bet if he's going to make it or not. Just that fast.
Yep.
Exactly. So what's going to happen now that more sports betting is coming back? Does it take some of the day trading out of it? Exactly.
Yeah,
it's crazy. Yes. Hey, thanks for listening this morning. You got to come back this afternoon. We've got Craig Van Dyke from Top Third Ag Marketing coming on. And tomorrow, you know what it is. We got the free-for-all tomorrow morning. Wiesmeyer, Johnson & Haney.